Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. This is Pastor Craig, and it's a Friday morning, 8:17 a.m., and it is Friday, March the 1st, 2024. That's right. It's March. Can you believe it? I know. I can't either. So, yes, I am not Scott Spears. Scott Spears is not here this morning, but if you've been paying any kind of attention to what's been going on, you knew that Scott wasn't going to be here. But in order to continue on with the live broadcasting while Scott was out, going around to the various high schools and things like that with Mary Ellen, I offered to cover for him. So you're stuck with me today. And quite honestly, you're stuck with me till about 2 o'clock. Now, the plan is I'll be here till 10, and Scott is pretty sure that he'll be back with Matt and Carrington and Sean at 10 o'clock to kind of fill us all in on what went on at the high school this morning. And then I'll be back on at 11 with your What's Happening, Marion. And then Scott and Matt and I will be here for the Exchange Club at 12. And at 1 o'clock, it'll be Study His Word with me. So that's kind of the lineup for today. And then, of course, tonight they have the Friday night show with Scott and Matt and Carrington from 8 until 10. And in between all of that, there is going to be the reception for Mary Ellen over at Kingston Residences from 3:30 this afternoon until 5. And I hear that there's going to be all kinds of good food and things to drink. There are going to be local politicians and dignitaries. And so it should be a really good fun time. So I imagine that if you follow Scott or the station on Facebook, you'll see tons and tons of pictures. And of course, it's something that we'll all be talking about for quite some time. So today's is going to be a fun-packed, action-packed day. So I'm glad you're listening this morning. And so I thought I would kind of share some information with you. I tend to be one of those people that if I think of something I want to look up, I'll look it up, and then I'll see something there that'll take me to the next level or take me down a certain path. And then I'll see something else that'll take me down another path. And before you know it, I've spent an hour and 15 minutes and I've covered four topics that I never thought I would before. And that's kind of what I have for you this morning. So I was thinking about, you know, this all the events that are going on yesterday and today for Mary Ellen Withrow. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I don't really know exactly what the Treasurer of the United States does. I mean, I think I kind of know, but I, you know, was reaching back into the deep recesses of my memory, and I couldn't really think of anything that I'd learned in school or anything like that that the Treasurer would do. Now, you know, their signature appears on our money, but outside of that, what does the U.S. Treasurer do? So that started me on my little journey. So this morning I thought I would share with you some interesting things, at least I think they're interesting, some interesting things that kind of pertain to all of this. So the U.S. Department of the Treasury. Now, at the very top, you know, if you, you know, like they do these organizational charts and you got this box that's up there at the top and that's one person, and then lines go out from the box to other little boxes, and, you know, it's this person and that person in this department and that department and all that. Well, for the U.S. Department of Treasury, the top box is the Secretary of the Treasury. Now, right now, that's currently Janet Yellen. And actually, I didn't look up. Now, see, here I go. I didn't get down this rabbit trail. I didn't see who was the Secretary of the Treasury when Mary Ellen was the U.S. Treasurer. I neglected to look at that. But anyway, so you've got the Secretary of the Treasury, the big boss that's in charge of all the Treasury, and that is a cabinet position on the President's cabinet. Then under the Secretary of the Treasury is the Deputy Secretary of the Treasury. You got to have that deputy there. And then under the Deputy of the Deputy Secretary of the Treasury, the line goes down and then it breaks out into four departments. You've got domestic finance, you've got international affairs, you've got the Office of Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, and then the fourth one is the Office of the Treasurer. And that's what Mary Ellen was. She was in charge of that department, Office of the Treasurer. So that's kind of the makeup of the Treasury Department of the United States. All right. Now, what does the U.S. Treasurer do? Well, I'm glad you asked because I have the answer. The U.S. Treasurer oversees the Bureau of Engraving and Printing and the U.S. Mint, the United States Mint. Also, the Treasurer serves as senior advisor and representative of the Treasury on behalf of the Secretary in the areas of community development and public engagement. So I'm not really sure how the Treasury kind of gets involved in community development, but, you know, public engagement, you know, that's the PR department. The important things here is the Bureau of Engraving and Printing and the United States Mint. And so what all do they do at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing? Well, they design and print all of the U.S. currency. They do research and development in counterfeit deterrent technologies. And that's really a big part. Well, the biggest part is obviously designing and printing the money. But the research and development in counterfeit deterrent technologies is a big thing. You know, our money has gotten really fancy in the last few decades with all the different security devices that are in the money and, you know, secret marks and all that kind of stuff so that they can battle the counterfeits. You know, it's kind of interesting because I heard one time where how they train people to detect counterfeits is you study the genuine thing. In other words, you become a student of the money and you learn all the attributes of the genuine thing. When you know the genuine thing inside out and backwards, then you're able to detect counterfeits. They don't really spend much time studying the counterfeits. They spend their time studying the real McCoy. And that way, they learn all the details of what should be there, and that helps you with detecting the counterfeits. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Now, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing also prints other things, either has at times or currently does, prints other things besides money. U.S. stamps, postage stamps, they were printed by the Bureau of Engraving and Printing between 1894 and 2005. They printed their first one in 1894, and then their last run on U.S. stamps was 2005. So that was 111 years, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Not only were they printing our money, but they were printing all our postage stamps. In 1939, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing first printed food stamps. How about that? And if you remember, the food stamps, I can remember them from the 60s and 70s, that era. I don't know what they looked like in 1939. It was on the same lines, but it was a coupon. It was actually a coupon. It was, they weren't quite as big as dollar bills. They were somewhat smaller, probably about two-thirds of the size of a dollar bill. But they printed these coupons, and they were in a book. And you would tear the food stamps coupons out of the book, and they had like $1, $5, $10 denominations. But there was a big problem with people selling their food stamps and exchanging them for cash and various other things. And so they started phasing out food stamps, going to an electronic debit card. And they started that in the early 90s, and by 2004, it was all the coupons were phased out, and it became 100% electronic. But for roughly 60 years, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing printed the food stamps. And by the way, something I kind of mention on here. They did some decent designs. They put some effort into the designs of the food stamp coupons. I don't know if any of you can remember them from 30, 40 years ago, but they were almost like money. I mean, you know, they were very detailed designs. So that was kind of neat. Another thing that the Bureau of Engraving and Printing did was the MPC, Military Payment Certificates. Any of you who are Vietnam veterans, and I think they were even used during the Korean conflict, but they got paid with MPC, Military Payment Certificates. And again, it was like money, but it wasn't our currency, but it was the equivalent of our currency. All right, so that's the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. That's something that the treasurer is in charge of. Okay, she's also in charge. Now, see, I said there, she. Not necessarily a she. However, I'll have more to say about that here in a few minutes. Okay, so in charge of the U.S. Mint. The U.S. Mint makes all the coin in circulation. They make all the collectible coins. And for instance, if you ever bought proof sets or mint sets or, they've had commemorative coins over the years, those are all made by the U.S. Mint. And they also make all medals that are given out and sold. So that's what the U.S. Mint does. The facilities that they have. There is in Philadelphia a production facility. There is in San Francisco a production facility. And there is in Denver a production facility. Philadelphia, San Francisco, and Denver. Now, if you've ever been a coin collector or you've had a coin collector in your family, you know that when you look at a coin, you can tell which production facilities the coin was made at. For instance, if the coin was made in Denver, then above the date, there'll be a little D. Now, on some coins, the D and S's, that I'll talk about the S in a minute, the D and S's, they appeared somewhere else, not necessarily right over the date, but primarily they'd have a little D over the date. It was minted in Denver. San Francisco, same thing. All the coins that were minted in San Francisco had a little S on them. And then Philadelphia, for the longest time, Philadelphia, there would be no, what they called a mint mark. There'd be no mint mark. So if you just had the date and then it was plain, there was no mint mark, you knew it was made in Philadelphia. Now, in recent years, they've started putting the P on it. So you can have the P for Philadelphia, D for Denver, S for San Francisco. Now, at times in our history, we had mint in the mint production facility in New Orleans. And so those coins would have an O on them for New Orleans. So that's the production facilities and the mint marks. Now, there is also a production facility in West Point, New York. And that's where they produce the collectible coins, not coins just made for general circulation, but they the special coins that they sell to collectors. Then there is the Washington, D.C. headquarters for the U.S. Mint. Nothing's made there, but that's their headquarters. And then finally, falling under the facilities of the U.S. Mint is Fort Knox, Kentucky. And Fort Knox, we've all heard of Fort Knox. It's the bullion depository. I don't know if any of you have ever been to Fort Knox, which, by the way, all of these facilities, the production facilities and Fort Knox, you can take tours. Now, you don't get to see, like, you can't just walk into the vault at Fort Knox and, you know, pick up the gold bars and everything, but you can take a tour there. And now, I've never taken a tour there or at any of the production facilities, but it would have to be really interesting. But the Fort Knox Bullion Depository, let me give you some facts about Fort Knox. Now, I found this really interesting. So, Fort Knox, that's where we keep all our gold. Let's see. Approximately half of the Treasury's stored gold is stored at Fort Knox. So half of all the gold that the U.S. Treasury owns, which basically the U.S. owns, is stored at Fort Knox. Would you like to guess how much gold is stored at Fort Knox? 147.3 million ounces of gold. 147.3 million ounces of gold is stored at Fort Knox. And again, that's roughly half of all the gold that the Treasury owns. They have some of it stored in Philadelphia, and they have some of it stored in San Francisco. And there was another place that it was stored. I can't remember, but another place. But the majority, half of it, is at Fort Knox. So you've got 147 million ounces down there, and you've got the others that's stored at San Francisco and Philadelphia. Altogether, the United States Treasury has about 300 million ounces of gold. Now, the most we've ever had was in December of 1941. There was 650 million ounces of gold owned by the U.S. government. So currently, we own about half of what we owned in 1941. But that's a lot of gold. Now, It's stored in the form of gold bars. The standard gold bar is 400 ounces. Okay? One gold bar is 400 ounces of pure gold. In other words, it weighs about 27 and a half pounds. So can you imagine holding a gold bar that weighed 27 pounds? It's 400 ounces. The book value, see, they keep track of all this stuff. You know, they keep track of their gold supplies. The book value of a gold bar, in other words, what they have in their books, it's based on $42 an ounce. Well, $42.22, but $42 an ounce. So the book value of one gold bar is $16,888. One gold bar, $16,888. But that's the book value. What is it in today's value? Well, I looked at, I was putting this information together Wednesday night. Wednesday night, the price of gold, the gold market closed at $2,043 per ounce Wednesday night. So that was the value today. So the value today of one gold bar, one 400-ounce gold bar, is $817,000. So just imagine yourself standing there holding this 27.5-pound gold bar, and you would have in your hands $817,000 worth of gold. That's pretty interesting. Now you ask yourself, what is the value of all the gold at Fort Knox, the 147 million ounces of gold? Well, you needn't worry about that, because I've done the math for you. That's right. The 147 million ounces of gold at Fort Knox, book value, this is what they carry on their accounting books, at $42 an ounce, the value of the gold at Fort Knox is $621 million. Well, and you can throw $900,000 in there. $621,900,000. But that's the book value. What is the value of the 147 million ounces of gold at Fort Knox on today's market? It is over $300 billion. That's right. $300 billion with a B. Dollars. And when you combine that with all the other gold that the United States owned, we have approximately $600 billion of gold. Now, I also saw on the, looked up, and what is our national debt? Has anybody been following our national debt? Right now, we have over $34 trillion in national debt. That equates to over $100,000 per every single American. So in other words, each one of us is in debt over $100,000 on behalf of the United States. You know, when I was looking at this, the $34 trillion national debt, a couple things came to my mind. First of all, the $600 billion in gold we have wouldn't even begin to cover that debt if we had to pay it. But the thing that really struck me is when you start talking about $34 trillion in national debt, the numbers are so big that they really almost become meaningless. I mean, you can't wrap your head around $34 trillion. I mean, it's tough wrapping your head around a million or a billion. But when you get up into things like the trillions of dollars, you just it almost becomes meaningless. I mean, how do you fathom that much? And I think part of the reason that our leaders in Washington have, you know, gotten us into a place of such debt is when they're dealing with billions and billions of dollars that they don't have to work for to generate, I think that the numbers do kind of almost become meaningless, or they lose the sense of value. When you start talking, well, $100 billion for this and $100 billion for that and $50 billion for this, I mean, it just kind of loses all significance and relevance. So anyway, that's the facts on the storehouse of treasure at Fort Knox. All right. Now, treasurers, U.S. treasurers, Mary Ellen, as you know, she was the 40th treasurer of the United States. Altogether, there have been 45. The current one now is the 45th treasurer of the United States. The last 17, okay, the last 17 U.S. treasurers have been female. That's right. Starting in 1949, when Truman appointed Georgia Clark, U.S. treasurer, they have all been female since. So that means the last 75 years have been a female treasurer. I don't know what the significance of that is. I don't know if there is any significance, but that's the way it is. Now, let's go back to the first treasurer of the United States. He was a man by the name of Michael Hillegas. He was appointed on July 29th, 1775. Now, the interesting thing about that was before the Declaration of Independence. That was before there was even a United States of America. He was appointed by the Continental Congress to the office of Treasurer of the United Colonies, because that's what we were before we were United States. When we were getting organized, when we were getting the colonies organized, and we were getting this Continental Congress together, this was what we were called. We were called the United Colonies. So he was appointed on July 29th, 1775, and he served until September 11th, 1789. And that's kind of, there's some little significance there. And the significance is not September 11th, 9/11. The significance we'll see later on. All right. So he's appointed as the treasurer to the of the United Colonies by the Continental Congress. He was the editor of the Declaration of Independence. Now, we know Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, but he was the editor. And Thomas Jefferson, when he wrote the original Declaration of Independence, then it was presented to the Continental Congress for them to vote on, and several changes were made in it before the actual vote to approve it was voted on it. This guy, Michael Hillegas, he was the editor of it. He's the guy that sat there and had to scratch out sentences and put in new sentences and all that until they came up with the final thing. All right. So he held this office as treasurer all through the Revolutionary War. And much of his personal fortune went to support the efforts of the colonies in fighting the war, which I found to be very interesting. But it wasn't unusual in that when we were fighting for our independence, these early founding fathers that people love to bash, not give them credit for what they've done, many of them invested all of their personal fortunes. Many of them lost their personal fortunes. Many of them had properties destroyed by the British. He sunk all his money into it, and he was the guy. On September 9th, 1776, the Continental Congress officially changed the name to United States of America. Ta-da! And so now he was the treasurer for the United States of America, because we changed our name from the United Colonies to the United States. On 9/11, 1789, Congress created the Treasury Department, and Alexander Hamilton became the first Secretary of the Treasury, and Hillegas resigned his position as the Treasurer, and then the new President, George Washington, then appointed his treasurer. So that's a little bit of background on our first U.S. treasurer, Michael Hillegas. And by the way, Mr. Hillegas appeared on the $10 bill from 1907 to 1922. Now, I don't have any of those bills. I wasn't around back then, but I have actually seen some. I hung around for a number of years with some coin dealers and coin collectors, and as I worked in a shop that sold coins and stamps to collectors. So I'm familiar with a lot of the early stuff, and if you ever have a chance to, get a book or go somewhere that has old currency or get a book that has it pictured, it is really interesting. Some of our old currency was really, really ornate. I mean, what we had in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and then they redesigned the bills, what we had earlier, they were very, very boring. The stuff I grew up with, the dollar bills and the $10 bills, very, very boring. Now, when they redesigned our currency, starting with Mary Ellen, when they redesigned the currency, they got a little more interesting, but you really don't know what interesting currency is until you look at the stuff we had in the 1800s. That's some interesting currency. But anyway, so this guy, Hillegas, he was on the $10 bill from 1907 to 1922. And incidentally, I might mention, who's on the $10 bill now? Alexander Hamilton, who was the guy that was the first Secretary of the Treasury, Alexander Hamilton. So, you see, there's connections in there. All right. So, Mary Ellen was the fourth treasurer from Ohio. Out of 45 U.S. treasurers, four of them have been from Ohio. So, who was our first treasurer from Ohio? His name was John Sloan. He was a member of the Ohio House of Representatives from 1803 to 1806. He was the fourth Speaker of the House, that is the House here in Ohio, the Ohio House, and he served as Speaker of the House from December of 1805 to December of 1806. He was in the U.S. House of Representatives from 1819 to 1829, and he was Secretary of the State of Ohio from 1841 to 1844. So, let's see. From 1841 to 1844. He was the seventh Treasurer of the United States. He served as treasurer from 1850 to 1853 under the presidents Millard Fillmore and Franklin Pierce. Two presidents, I might add, that you rarely ever hear about. Can you name one thing that Millard Fillmore did? Can you name one thing that Franklin Pierce did? There wasn't a much going on in that. You know, really, there was a lot going on because that was right before the Civil War. But those are two presidencies that are not really famous for anything. So anyway, that was John Sloan. He was the first Ohioan U.S. Treasurer. He started out in the House of Representatives here in Ohio, and then he was Speaker of the House. Then he went to the U.S. House of Representatives, and finally, before being Secretary of the Treasury, Treasurer of the United States, he was Secretary of the State of Ohio. So he had what we would consider a distinguished political record. The second Ohioan to be Treasurer of the United States was Carmi A. Thompson. That's Carmi, C-A-R-M-I, Carmi A. Thompson. He was member of the Ohio House of Representatives in 1904 to 1907, Speaker of the Ohio House, 1906, Secretary of the State of Ohio, 1907 to 1911. Sounds kind of familiar. It's almost like following in the footsteps of the first Ohioan to be Treasurer of the United States. Speaker of the House, Secretary of State of Ohio. He was, this is a good example of being in the right place at the right time. He was Secretary of the State of Ohio. Well, then President William Howard Taft got elected as president. So for 5 months, this guy was the personal secretary to the president, President William Taft. And then after 5 months there, he was appointed Treasurer of the United States, 1912 to 1913. So you stop and think about it. If Taft had lost the election, this guy probably never would have made it as Treasurer of the United States. But because he was Secretary of the State of Ohio and had been in the Ohio House when William Taft got elected as president, this guy got to Washington with President Taft. That's one of those things where, you know, hard work and following a path and a goal pays off sometimes when, because of your hard work, because you've been pursuing a certain path, then timing and events play out just right and you can be the beneficiary of that. Now, after he was Treasurer of the United States, he came back to Ohio and lost in his run for governor. So thus ended his political career. All right. Now we have the third Ohioan to be U.S. Treasurer, William A. Julian. William A. Julian was the 28th Treasurer. He served from 1933 to 1949. And if you remember your history right, that overlaps the Roosevelt years as president. So this guy served during Roosevelt's presidencies and also afterwards in Truman's administration. Now, there are a couple things that are interesting about him. First of all, he is the last man to serve as the U.S. Treasurer. If you remember back a little while ago, I was saying that all the treasurers since 1949 have been female. And this guy, William A. Julian, served from 33 to 49. He was the last one, the last man to serve as a treasurer. Now, how did he rise to the top? This guy is interesting in that he didn't have a political career. He was in banking, bank management. That's where his career was. And Woodrow Wilson wanted him on the Federal Trade Commission, and he was not interested. He declined. And Woodrow Wilson wanted him on the Federal Reserve Board because of his bank management career. And he also declined that, which is kind of interesting because the Federal Reserve Board, that's a big deal when you're in banking. But he declined both of those. Now, he did have an unsuccessful run as U.S. Senator. And after he had an unsuccessful run, U.S. Senator, he wound up in Roosevelt's White House as the Secretary of the United States. And so he served all through Roosevelt's, and he is the second longest serving U.S. Treasurer. And you may ask yourself, why was he replaced in 1949? Because he, after Roosevelt passed away, you know, he served under Truman. Well, this guy probably would have served longer, and he probably would have been the longest serving U.S. Treasurer, except that he was killed in a car crash in 1949 while he was serving as the U.S. Treasurer. So, unfortunately, that brought his career to an end. And then finally, that brings us to Mary Ellen Withrow, who is the fourth U.S. Treasurer from the state of Ohio, and she is the 40th person to serve in that position. And quite honestly, I don't really have anything about Mary Ellen Withrow that I could add to everything that's been already broadcast on her here in the past. And I know she had an interview with Scott yesterday and got to talk about her things that she has done all the way, starting with Elgin School Board up through the local level treasurer to a state level treasurer to a federal level treasurer. So Mary Ellen has had certainly an excellent career, and her career would certainly stack up against anybody else who's been the U.S. Treasurer. But I thought you might enjoy that, some of the variety of people we've had as U.S. Treasurer. I hope you have a little bit better understanding today of what the U.S. Treasurer does. And you know, I think if I was the U.S. Treasurer, I'd want to once a week go down to Fort Knox and just kind of stand there and just stare at all that gold. No, after a while it would get old. But anyway, I want to thank you for being here, and we're going to take a top of the hour break, and I'll be back in about 15 minutes, and we're going to open up the phone lines. I've got some things we want to talk about and get some calls from you, so don't go anywhere. I'll see you in about 15.
The place for guests like Dean of the White House Press Corps, Helen Thomas.
Helen, how do you deal with criticism? Because certainly 10 presidents, you've had your share of criticism. What do you? How do you deal with that?
Well, in the first place, you look at it and you see whether it's valid or not. And then you consider the source.
And then just
I just made up that answer.
And then onward and upward.
You're always a little bit miffed, of course, because everyone doesn't love you. But at the same time, you have to look at yourself and see whether they're right or not.
Do you go home at night, Helen, and think, my goodness, this person said that, this person said that? Does it keep you up at nights?
Well, I don't say it keeps me up at night. I think that nobody likes criticism, but sometimes it's very legitimate.
Final question I have for you, Helen, is probably the question I've been asked the most since I did the interview with you back in October of 2010. Why did you finally decide to speak, and how did it come about that you chose me to do the first interview?
Well, Well, because you've been very kind, very fair. You don't jump in and attack me every time I open my mouth. I like that. And I think you're a fair reporter.
Streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com.
Hey, it's Scott, and I won't be able to be live with you in the studio today as I'm out on assignment, so we've prepared a classic episode of Now with the Scott Spears for your listening enjoyment. Talk with you soon.
Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here. First broadcast morning of 2023. Can you believe that? January 3rd, 2023, 16 minutes past the hour. And a little bit of a rainy morning here in Marion, but we'll take it. Temperatures are not too bad. As many of you know, 2022 was a very interesting year here in the city of Marion, state of Ohio. A lot of things happened, one of which was our mayor running for statewide office, treasurer of the state of Ohio, ran on the Democratic ticket back in November, started in February. It was an interesting race, and people have been coming up and asking me since that race ended, what's the mayor doing? What's he up to? How are things with him? And I'm so delighted this morning that as we head into 2023, our guest for this hour this morning to talk about a whole lot of stuff going on here in Marion and to reflect back on the year 2022 is the mayor of the city of Marion, Scott Schertzer. Mayor Schertzer, good morning. Happy New Year.
Well, good morning and happy new year to you and your listeners. It's always good to be on with you. It's kind of become a regular event, a monthly event for us, even though we went on hiatus for a little bit last year because I was on the campaign trail every day last year. So,
absolutely. After the election was over, as I told you, people were coming up to me. We communicated through email. They were saying, well, how's the mayor? You kind of took a few months away from the media there. Did you feel that was necessary after the election?
Well, let me just first say this. I had the absolute time of my life running for statewide office, professionally, that is. It was such an invigorating experience. You would jump in the car in the morning or late in the afternoon, and you'd be on the road to far-flung locations around the state, some places that I had been before, some places that I hadn't been back to in years, and in many cases, places that I'd never gone. And it was so exciting for me to meet different Ohioans.
CRT Mechanicals, address 2842 Marion Waldo Road, telephone number 740-225-4495, webpage crtmechanicals.com.
We all make choices. When it comes to alcohol, kids make choices whether to drink or not.
Bye, Dad.
Bye-bye.
Remember, I'm going to Alex's party tonight and sleeping over.
Hey, Em, have a seat for a second. Remind me about that party again.
And adults make choices whether to talk about it. That's true of parents and every other trusted adult in a kid's life. Kids want to know our expectations when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. They want guidance and honest answers to their questions. And it makes a difference when the message is consistent and part of everyday conversations. So talk with your kids and help lead them on a positive path. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
And now, AdamTheComputerGuy.com presents Great Moments in Celebrity